Hi, this is Janine Percival Wright, the Director of Legal Affairs for Intellectual Property and Litigation with True Religion Brand Jeans in beautiful Los Angeles, California. You're listening to IP Fridays. Thanks for the great podcast, guys.
Hello, and welcome to this episode of IP Fridays. Our names are Ken Suzanne and Rolf Clayson, and this is the podcast dedicated to intellectual property. It does not matter where you are from, in-house or private practice, novice or expert. We will help you stay up to date with current topics in the fields of trademarks, patents, design and copyright, discover useful tools, and much more.
Today we have the latest news on Monsanto and Apple. Ken is interviewing Kevin Nichols, who is COO of Preventis, and they talk about wearable technology. And also we will tell you about a very cool tool for patent searching, which I frequently use. And in fact, I will tell you about this tool right now. The Lens at www.lens.org, L-E-N-S.org. The link is in the show notes, is a patent search tool that I frequently use for prior art search. Many jurisdictions are covered by this database, and you can build really complicated queries with the advanced search. And one really interesting feature is that you can not only search patent applications and granted patents, but you can also search search reports, you can search supplementary protection certificates, you can search plant patents, you can search design rights, and some really cool other document types. So you might cover even more prior art than with some paid search tools. You can search the full text, or you can search inventors or owners, the title, abstract claims, or you can search applicants, or you can search also by publication number or filing number, and you can also search classifications. So it seems to be really powerful. And one thing that I didn't find is the coverage of the databases, and especially what kind of countries are covered in full text and what kind of legislations are not covered in full text. So I would not really use this tool for example, FTO searches, freedom to operate searches. But for prior art, it has given me really, really helpful results. And typically, I use Total Patent by LexisNexis. But this tool, the Lens, has been complementary for a while now, and it has given me some different prior art documents that I didn't find with Total Patent. So go over to www.lens.org, L-E-N-S.org, and try it out yourself. So next, let's head over to Ken and Kevin Nichols. They are discussing how wearable technology is changing lives of many.
Thank you, Rolf. I am joined today by Mr. Kevin Nichols, who is the COO of Preventis. Preventis is a privately owned company and leading developer of mobile health applications and remote monitoring systems that connect mobile, home-based, and on-premise technologies to deliver continuous patient care across the health continuum. Welcome, Kevin, to our program.
Good morning, Ken. Thanks for inviting me.
Yes, I'm so glad you're able to join us. There's lots of interesting things I want to talk to you today about.
Great.
Could you tell me a little bit about your experience and your background so our listeners can get an idea of the 40 years of experience that you have?
Yeah, when you say it that way, it makes me feel like I'm a little old. I'm a serial entrepreneur. I have technical roots. I've been in the healthcare field for not quite all 40 years, but have an interesting departure at one point in time into aerospace, came back into healthcare, done a number of startups, been in multiple clinical areas all the way from nephrology to cardiovascular, became interested in online behavior modification about 10, 15 years ago, actually applied and received a patent on the topic, and have become a student of adherence to care plans over that decade period of time because I see a lot of the reasons for healthcare costs rising and staying high is tied to the fact that physicians frequently prescribe things and patients don't always adhere to them. So when the CEO, John Otterstatter from Preventus, approached me about joining him in building Preventus, I was excited to the opportunity because here I was a med tech guy, had done a number of things in the medical device area, but never had had a chance to take a swing at an IT arena, as well as being able to actually do something that would perhaps be able to attenuate healthcare costs.
Sure. And you've been with Preventus for how long?
Not quite a year.
Okay.
Not quite a year. The company's about 5 years old. The company grew itself largely out of a group of IT folks out of Rochester, pulling software people out of IBM as IBM was repositioning, and then licensing some cardiac monitoring technology for Mayo Clinic.
And that would be the, is that the Body Guardian remote monitoring system?
It is, it is.
What is that exactly?
Yeah, and so it's actually a fairly broad offering. The vision of the company, I think, early on started out looking at remote patient care or monitoring. Should be careful because monitoring is the passive monitoring using a software platform with wearable technology. Remote patient care, I think, is where we're going from the standpoint of more active interventions. But most tactically, the company developed a low body burden ECG cardiac monitoring device. If you think about a Holter monitor, where a lot of people have worn those for telemetry for 12 to 24 or 36 hours of cardiac monitoring, this technology enables a patient to be monitored for cardiac arrhythmias for better part of 30 to 60, sometimes 90 days.
Wow.
So the cardiac application is the first clinical physiologic measurement, but the company has built upon the software platform that obviously includes an Android phone and a server, then down into a portal for monitoring, but it also includes things like blood pressure, weight scale, actively working on integration of glucometers, coagulometers, and pulse ox. So it's a fascinating platform. It's a fascinating time to be in healthcare IT.
What do you think about the growing prevalence of wearable technology? You know, it's everywhere. We're hearing about it. We're seeing things in the media. Is this a fad that we're dealing with?
Yeah, that's a great question because, you know, I think my thoughts in preparing for this interview took me down two paths. One is that there's clearly a lot of froth and a lot of interest about things that are cool, more of the gadgetry, you know, the fun glasses, the Fitbits, you know, things like that. I think these are the things that a lot of people, frankly, the younger generation, are excited about because they are things they can talk to each other about at a health club or what have you. And that one, I think, is generating a lot of the noise in the market because it's quick to market. It's a consumer play. It's a great opportunity, and it's measured in the B numbers. You know, it's a large market. We'll talk a little bit about how fast those product life cycles are, but the reality is that I think a lot of the opportunity to really have an impact on healthcare is at, if you will, at a little bit of a different end of the marketplace, and that one is where technology has had to go through more regulatory shakedown. You're basically trying to get a patient engaged, but you're also trying to get a physician to prescribe. And then obviously in today's world in the U.S. healthcare system, you've got to get a payer to pay for it. So there's a continuum, and I just described two bookends, the consumer side as well as the healthcare more classic fee-for-service. I think the inroads of where the wearable technology is going to arise is where it can actually impact healthcare by improving clinical outcomes, reducing costs, by enabling physicians to manage more patients away from the most expensive side of care, which is the hospital. So that's the area that I've been the most interested in, but it's not to distract from a huge opportunity on the consumer side.
Sure. Do you see any differences from where we were, let's say, in the late 1990s, early 2000s, when there was basically an explosion of web development? Everyone was running to the web. Is that the same thing here with wearable technology?
Yeah, I think there is. I mean, you know, we as a country tend to like to run at large moving trends, you know, where you can put money to work and you can create a lot of excitement. I think in this particular case, it's an interesting natural build because micro machine sensors actually started. I was involved in buying a pressure micro machine pressure sensor business in the very early 90s. And so the reality is micro machine pressure sensors and other kinds of diodes and things like that have been evolving rather rapidly over the last two decades. Mm-hmm. I think really what you've seen is the convergence of a lot of software people that can do some pretty exciting things algorithmically with micro size, small accelerometers and other kinds of sensors that can allow, if you will, more data to be pulled off of the body and effectively converted into clinically valid or consumer interested physiologic measurements. So I think it's a natural evolution, much like the internet.
Yes.
I think that to leverage it as much as the potential that it offers, its promise, if you will, I do believe it does have to have some clinical value and not just a consumer spin, because I think those are going to be very fast and furious.
Yes.
And we'll talk about IP, you know, shortly, I'm sure. But, you know, I think it sets up a very interesting discussion on what you do as far as having two very distinct markets.
And you've been with startup companies over many decades. If you were to talk to a startup company today, what would be some of the things that you would tell them before they jump into the wearable space? What do they need to know before getting into something like this?
Yeah. Well, you know, the I was touching it a little bit just now. Because this is a continuum, it makes building a company very easily become confusing. And when you're out raising capital, you know, as you're going from investor A to investor Z, you know, you will find yourself being tested because some of them will come from a strong consumer perspective, others will come from a strong healthcare perspective, let's say. And so I think probably the biggest nugget there is really try to identify where you want to pursue and try to maintain conviction on it. And that means you have to have it thought through. You know, it means you have to sit down and think through what's it going to take for you to actually take a great idea and get to the consumer market. And, you know, unfortunately, you know, the healthcare system does have a lot of regulatory hurdles to get through, but it generally has a much larger sustainable terminal value than something that's more quick hit. And then that starts to impact how you raise capital around the company, Ken.
Sure. With respect to intellectual property, the name of our podcast is IP Fridays. IP is very important to many companies. Can you tell me about the importance of IP in the wearable space? What do companies need to do before getting involved with wearables? And, you know, how important is that asset to the company?
Yeah, I think it's going to become even more important. You know, when markets start to become frothy and start to grow the interest of a lot of investors, value starts to be assessed by intellectual property portfolios. You know, I think frequently it's an afterthought. You know, and filing patents is not an inexpensive activity. There's also been a lot of changes in intellectual property law. I would expand the discussion to include trademarks and brands, I might add.
Yes. Very important in what we do every day.
Yeah. And so I think, you know, it goes back a little bit of start with the end in mind and how you want to actually create, you know, if you will, an exit and who would be potentially target exit partners and what would basically move their financial needle as to pay you a higher price for the asset that you're effectively building. Mm-hmm. And I think IP in that broad definition is clearly a component of it. I think the consumer business is going to tend to be much more brand and trademark sensitive because you're going to be having to deal with quicker S-curves. The longer term ones are going to be powerfully important to have technology, device, software, algorithms, predictive analytic kind of IP protection, because you're going to have to go through a much longer journey to get the product through all the regulatory life cycles. So it goes back to start with the end in mind, what market are you going to go after, and then that's going to drive a lot of your investment dollars as you're building the company.
Sure. Now, as the COO, I'm sure there's a lot of issues you deal with on a day-to-day basis. What are some of the pressing things that, well, we could say either keep you up at night or that you're constantly thinking about or you're grappling with?
Yeah,
particularly as we talk about the wearable area and what we're in that sort of space.
Well, you know, the it's multifaceted,
okay.
You know, but I do believe that one of the most important assets that the company has is people. And, you know, clearly this topic, as we talked about earlier, Ken, is extremely frothy, very active, and it's I don't think it's going to be a fad. So that means that hiring people that can solve problems today and actually can grow and solve tomorrow's problems, if not next year's problem, is one that keeps me awake at night a lot, okay? Mm-hmm. Where do you find those kind of people? That's point one. Point two is it links to people is that what kind of regulatory or commercial trends are going to be hitting us? You know, in the case of Preventus, you know, where we've chosen a very healthcare strong strategy. We spent a lot of time establishing clinical evidence and what have you. What we're becoming more sensitive to is that in addition to the FDA compliance area, which is no small area mm-hmm. relative to software development, I would add, you also have huge issues and challenges associated with privacy and security. And it's an area that I think that Preventus has actually done an outstanding job very early on. But the reality is that managing data is incredibly challenging. And you know, you can basically say you can anonymize it, but when you're actually monitoring key physiologic components, you're going to have questions that pop up. Mm-hmm. You're going to have to interrogate data. And in some cases, you know, you're going to have to actually have more clarity as to what kind of patient trends is to be able to handle the FDA issues. That then tees up the ONC issues, which is the privacy regulatory body. Mm-hmm. And, of course, you're playing with telecommunications, so you've got the FCC.
There's a lot of pieces
in this market that people don't fully grasp.
Wow. Wow, very interesting. Now, speaking of pieces, one of these pieces is actually the mobile piece, which is, I think, a critical part to many of these wearable technology devices. I'm curious what type of mobile platform you use. I know you brought in a smartphone today. And have you looked at wearable technology for yourself?
Yeah. Well, the answer is I'm still relatively healthy. I've been at it for 40 years. Uh-huh. My level of technology probably revolves around a pedometer,
okay.
You know, and an app on my phone to see what kind of food I'm consuming.
Do you use that every day? Or
I don't, but I try to use it once a week.
Okay.
I think the reality is that the government is also, the FDA, is also trying to sort through, as you're hearing about Apple and Samsung and the equivalent, you're trying to figure out how to have powerful apps on the phone and then give the FDA, FCC, and ONC, these acronyms, the comfort, you know, that these apps are not going to get corrupted and basically, you know, cause other issues to flow out. So in the case of the Preventus solution right now, we're using a lockdown dedicated Android phone for mm-hmm. the application. Mm-hmm. Get a lot of people that complain about the fact that, you know, they're having to carry two phones.
Sure.
And, you know, we did that on purpose. I think that as the FDA becomes more understanding and appreciative of certain kinds of controls that we could put in place, you could see our application evolve quickly into a phone app that would be just part of your phone. I think the reality is that smartphones have the ability to handle these kind of technologies easier than an old flip phone, if you will.
Sure.
But I would even argue that in some cases you're dealing with bumping up, if you will, with remote patient monitoring, which is where we're going, with you know, areas within the geographical areas of the country that just don't have enough internet, you know, access. You know, and you're in hearing politicians talk about it, that really the U.S. market really does not have as robust, you know, of a cellular system to really provide continuous monitoring. So that provides us some issues. So where does that all lead you? Well, you start looking for Wi-Fi hubs. You're looking for other ways of communicating, you know, key information. Again, this goes back to where's your market focus. If
yes.
you're dealing with a Fitbit, we're only worrying about, you know, things that are maybe when you're active at the health club or when you're exerting something, riding a bike or whatever, you're not interested in continuous monitoring. In my case, if I'm monitoring somebody for cardiac arrhythmias, being down for a couple hours is not a good thing.
That's right. So, and it's critical to have that critical access.
So it becomes very use case driven. Mm-hmm. And I would argue that the more compelling use cases are going to have the higher value, you know. But I think this is all part of positioning and focus and what have you.
You know, I think about health insurance companies. Do you think that health insurance companies will take an active interest, if they've not already done so, in wearable technology in a way to help keep their subscribers fit and healthy?
Yeah, no, they're clearly moving in these different directions. I don't believe I know any payer, whether it's government or private, that's not looking at this area. They are all scratching their head trying to figure out what the value proposition is for them.
Sure.
And that's that could be a cliche-ish kind of comment, but the reality is that this kind of data and conversion into information is effectively longitudinal in nature. I mean, what you're doing is you're trying to see if you can actually change somebody's behavior. You were just asking me, how often do I wear my pedometer and update the thing? That's an example of the kind of key questions that the payers are interested in, because if they pay to have something done for 30 days and with the anticipation that you're going to continue it for the rest of your life, and you don't, then that's a lost investment in their world.
Sure.
And we see that with regard to pharmaceuticals. So what I see right now is a lot of interest, a lot of questions, and they're looking for companies that have got the investors that can basically support the company through a journey of proving clinically and economically the value proposition.
Excellent. Two final questions. Do you think that wearable technology is totally dependent on the success of mobile phones, for example, or will there be other technologies that drive that success?
Yeah. I think that I'm already aware of a couple of the large communications companies that are trying to figure out how to make the technology smaller, lighter, easier. Mm-hmm. Lapels, I mean, you look at the things that Samsung are doing, which is exciting. Apple's sure. doing the same thing. You know, I think at the end of the day, it's going to evolve fairly quickly. I think it's going to evolve as quickly as the regulatory, if you go down that pathway, will tolerate it. I think the engineers have the ability to drive it. I think it becomes an issue of the channel and as well as what the regulators can tolerate and approve and accept. Mm-hmm. You know, I think you're seeing a lot of activity with Samsung and Apple these days at the FDA trying to educate and help them move down the road. So I think stay tuned on that one.
Yeah, I've seen a number of trademark applications being filed by Apple recently in connection with their
health kit. No, I think it's a very frothy area. I think, not to keep going back to a regulated area, but if you want to pursue something that's going to have a longer-term sustainable model, even though you have to make that system move faster, I think you do find yourself looking at basically a lot of upstream education.
Excellent. Any sage advice or words of wisdom? I know we've talked about a lot of things, but that you could impart to our listeners wherever they are around the world.
You know, I said it a little while ago. It's always about people. It's about clarity of where you're trying to go and trying to find access to capital that can actually help you get all the way through the journey, probably times two. Mm-hmm. It always takes more time and money than anybody wants to believe. I think it's an extremely exciting time. I think the amount of people that are excited to hear the company's stories are wildly high. I mean, I think everybody is interested in seeing this kind of technology brought forward. So I think it's an exciting time, finding good people, finding people that can grow with the company is always key in patient investors.
Kevin, this has been so fascinating. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Appreciate it. Thank you very much, Ken, for the opportunity.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
If you want to know more about Kevin, please go to www.ipfridays.com/Kevin. In the beginning, I promised you to tell you more about Monsanto and Apple. Well, there was a recent article on the CBS website about Monsanto facing dual threat after intellectual property theft. They are actually fighting against two different kinds of opponents. One kind of opponent is competitors in China who are trying to steal the latest research of Monsanto because developing own technology would be more expensive than stealing the technology. And on the other hand, they are facing intellectual property theft by critics who want to expose the latest research of Monsanto in order to generate negative press. Both is not very helpful, and I think that many companies struggle with these kinds of intellectual property theft. If you want to know more about this, head over to www.ipfridays.com/Monsanto. 3w.ipfridays.com/Monsanto. And there is another interesting story I want to share with you. On the famous blog Patently Apple, there was a recent story about Apple patents covering touchscreens for Macs and a new way to define tasks while working on a document called atomic tasks. And then there is a new gesture to invoke Siri on the desktop. So it seems to be clear from the patent applications that were published that touchscreens are coming to Macs and they will have really cool functionality like calling for the help of Siri by just drawing a double circle on the desktop. And then there is another really cool feature where when you are working on a document and you want to find a suitable image that you can include into the document, for example, you can just give the operating system like a task called atomic task to search for a particular image based on, for example, keywords. And then after a while, you return to this atomic task and then you just select the image of a choice of images that you want to include into your document. If you want to read the full article at Patently Apple, head over to 3w.ipfridays.com/patentlyapple, ipfridays.com/patentlyapple.
That's it for this episode. If you liked what you heard, please show us your love by visiting ipfridays.com/love and tweet a link to this show. We would be so grateful if you would do that. It would help us out to get the word out. Also, please subscribe to our podcast at ipfridays.com or on iTunes or stitcher.com. If you have a question or want to be featured in one of the upcoming episodes, please send us your feedback at ipfridays.com/feedback. Also, please leave us a review on iTunes. You can go to ipfridays.com/iTunes, and it will take you right to the correct page on iTunes. If you want to get mentioned on this podcast or even have comments within the next episode, please leave us your voicemail at ipfridays.com/voicemail. You have been listening to an episode of IP Fridays. The views expressed by the participants of this program are their own and do not represent the views of, nor are they endorsed by their respective law firms. None of the content should be considered legal advice. The IP Fridays podcast should not be construed as legal advice or legal opinion on any specific facts or circumstances. The contents of this podcast are intended for general informational purposes only, and you are urged to consult your own lawyer on any specific legal questions. As always, consult a lawyer or patent or trademark attorney. Copyright 2014, all rights reserved.